I like informal talk, yeah. I like questions and discussions.
Yeah, just keep it informal. Yeah, I'm original from Taiwan, academic Senegal, and I have been visiting Stanford in the past few years for doing work in CMB, and now I have an interest in inflation, and this is a topic. The topic is quite strange, but let me explain it bit by bit. Yeah. And first of all, talk about this, why we are doing this topic. Yeah, it's mostly motivated by this so-called the CMB anomalies. And what's that on large angle scales? And I think everybody has seen this so many times. We are looking at Canadian founder. Yeah, we are here. We are looking at the CMB coming from the decoupling surface. And this is the first full sky map made by Kobe, yeah, almost 20 years ago. And this is the map. And you can see this as we know, the mean temperature of the cosmic microwave background is about 2.7 Kelvin. But on top of this very smooth background radiation, there's anisotropy. Yeah. That means from different directions the temperatures are different, but by very small amount, just 100 Kelvin, micro Kelvin level. And I think everybody knows it now. Okay. And this is the WMAP 3 years data, and I didn't update it because it's the data from three years data onwards quite similar, yeah. And we have the WMAP 3 year full sky, and we can decompose the full sky in terms of harmonics, and this is the quotable, and it is the audible, and so on and so forth. It just decompose the full sky into different harmonics, and this one was done by my colleague Taiwan. And so just for fun, just put out the first year data. The first year data, you can see the so-called anomalies. You can see a few points here, and this one, and this one, and deviate from the lambda C, the well-known lambda CDM model, by more than 2 sigma. This gray band is the 2 sigma. Deviation, theoretical 2 sigma deviation from the lambda prediction by the lambda CDM model. This is so-called anomalies, CMB anomalies on large angle scales. And the third year data a little bit changed from the first year data. This point moved back to the standard prediction. So, bad, I don't know. But let's concentrate on this. Now it's a little bit confined to the very large angle scales. The quotable and the L about 20 and 40. And the data deviate from the standard lambda CDM a prediction more than 2 sigma.
Does it deviate in all frequencies? I'm not sure about this. Not 100% sure, but I think so. Yeah. Okay. This one is the power at the certain L deviated from the lambda CDM model at certain L's. And another is so-called the south-north power asymmetry. You cut the full sky into two halves. The loft pole is using these angles. It's not really the silential loft pole. This is the loft pole. And you cut the full sky into two halves and analyze the power in each half sky. And you will find that the Lofton, for example, half sky, the power is like this. And the Southern half sky, the power is a little bit higher than the loft sky. And this is the mean. So that means if you choose you separate the CMB full sky into two halves, and with respect to this direction, you'll find that the power in the north is different from the power in the south. This is so-called the south-north power asymmetry.
But if you do the same as the function of this north pole, then you move around.
Yep.
I mean, is it the place where it's maximized?
You mean this direction?
You can choose different slices, right, with
yep.
respect to
yep.
what you call the north pole, right?
Yep.
And
sure.
You can do the same for an arbitrary position. Is it where it's the difference maximized?
I think so, yeah. And in fact, this work was done by my student. I didn't know that before. He told me he found this asymmetry. Yeah, it's great.
Was he a good student?
Oh yeah, he's my best student so far. Yes.
I think like a year ago or two, there were some things that did the symmetry extends beyond elements 40. Is that right?
You mean the loft?
No, you showed between 0 and
40. Oh, 40, yeah.
2 and 40.
Yeah, you mean beyond that one?
I think there were recent things that it seems to go beyond that, you know?
I don't know, yeah. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and I'm concentrating on the large scale thing stuff, yeah. And when you look at the quarter ball and the octet ball, they are somehow this pattern. They're lying, they have some alignment. These people call it axis of evil. So I didn't do anything about this. Yeah, just look at this. And famous people, they came that all these anomalies, the chance all those occur. It's only one in 24,000, so it's quite odd. But this is the king. Yeah, it's very odd. Yeah, okay, and I have defined the so-called the CMB anomalies on large angular scales. Okay, let's try to understand the anomaly. Yeah. And of course, on large angular scales, this, so far the only viable mechanism to produce this CMB anisotropy on large angular scales is inflation. And the associated metric perturbation during inflation. Okay, let's look at this summary of one single model called a chaotic inflation. It's very simple, but so far so good. It's consistent with the CMB data. Okay, let's concentrate on this quadratic inflation. Very simple, just the mass term for the inverton. And this is the prediction from this quadratic chaotic inflation. when there's the white circle, and this is the e-folding. If you have 50 e-folding and 60 e-folding, we'll come back to see what's mean by e-folding. I'm sure you guys have about it already. And this is the prediction, and this is the tensor, R is the ratio of the tensor component over the scalar component. And the NS is the spectral index. The scalar spectral index is defined by this. This is the scalar power spectrum, the fluctuation, the scalar part of the metric perturbation during inflation. And this is the spectral index. And this is the measurement by WMAP, another large scale survey. And this is a very simple chaotic quadratic equation with this mass scale, and it could produce consistent with all with the data, the WMAP data, and also large scale survey data on this R ratio and the spectral index of the scalar metric perturbation.
What does it mean, R 0.002?
Oh, R is the ratio at this scale.
I understand, yeah. But what does it mean, 0.002?
I didn't spoil it. Some very large large scale. It corresponds to I think megaparsec scale. Yeah, on Okay, this is the contour plot, and it shows you that the quadratic chaotic inflation consistent very well with the measurement on the ratio and also the spectral index.
What's the current limit on R?
The what?
Current limit on R from B modes, what is it?
It's 0.2, around 0.2.
So they should start about seeing the chaotic inflation if it's the case.
Oh, yes, yes, yeah. Really, yeah. Okay. This is the cartoon telling you that the origin of this primordial density fluctuations. And this is the radius of our universe, and this is the Hubble radius, or the horizon. And this is during inflation, the Hubble radius is a constant. And after inflation, our universe gets reheated, and a hot Big Bang starts, and the horizon is increasing with time. If we pick one specific length scale, for example, our size of universe, and you look back time, and you will find that this scale is coming from sometime during inflation. So that means if you want to try to understand the CMV anomalies on large angle scales, it might have some origin from the inflation. Okay, and for example, in order to explain the size of the universe, you must have six e-foldings, inflation. Since the start of inflation, it could be longer, but our universe is just coming from this chunk. And if you want to try to understand the CMV anomaly, so this must be something funny taking place here, such that we may have some effect on this CMV. Anisotropy on this such a large scale. Okay, and usually a power spectrum generated during inflation, this one, the power spectrum, coming from two pieces. The first piece is the Hubble parameter divided by the velocity of the inverton during inflation. And we all know that in order to expand data, we better have a slow roll inflation. And this one is really a kinematics. It's just given a potential, given a inflation potential, and the inflaton is rolling slowly down the slope, and this is really give only it is a very simple piece of mathematics. You just figure out this the speed of the inflaton during inflation, and then this all determined by this inflation potential. So we call it this slow roll kinematics. And the other piece is a little bit complicated. Due to Hawking in the '80s, this is called they call the quantum fluctuations. When this inflaton rolling down the potential due to quantum mechanics, they should have some fluctuations around in time and also in space. And this is the answer is very simple. It's given by this Hawking temperature. This is H is the Hubble parameter during inflation, and the Hawking temperature is H about H over 2 pi. This is Hawking temperature. So in summary, this the power spectrum of the scalar metric perturbation coming from the slow roll dynamics, slow roll kinematics, and also the quantum fluctuation, the De Sitter or Hawking the quantum fluctuation during inflation. And in order to explain the CMB anomalies on large energy scales, people try to modify this piece, and there's a lot of papers, or to modify the second piece, the quantum fluctuations. There's also a lot of papers. Okay, let's do a little brief summary before we go to the main topic of this talk. Okay, maybe on large scale, let's concentrate on large scale. Maybe this the W map data give us some hints to go beyond the standard slow inflation. Okay, we have seen the cartoon. If we try to understand the CMB anomaly on large angle scales, maybe there's some funny things happening Y at the 60 EV things, and this one is really correspond to the large angle scale we are observing now. So it's a fine tuning problem, yeah, because we have Y at 60 EV things, something happened. But there, you can turn the problem from other perspective. Maybe we have a chance. There's a window to see the first few evolving of inflation. The CMB anomalies coming from this six evolving before inflation. Maybe they have some physics, and now we are seeing it. This is very interesting, and. As we have said many since then, many models, many papers try to explain this CMB. For example, the low quadruple problem give a mechanism to suppress it to give a low quadruple. And but anyway, since the power spectrum is generated by quantum fluctuations, and quantum is a quantum process, and we have seen the red curve is the mean value, is a theoretical prediction. Yeah, since we are only one universe, maybe it's really a quantum process. We have deviation from the mean prediction. So well, I have to admit that we are fooling by probability. Yeah, it's only a 2 sigma deviation. Yeah, in a quantum process, everything can happen. Yeah, we are only one universe to observe. So this is, we may all fool by a probability. Yeah, we don't need to explain the large scale anomaly we just accept it. It's a, one of the outcome. Yeah, you can take this this point of view. I have nothing to say. But as a theorist, it's very interesting to understand this CMP anomaly. And in most of these models, they give suppressed CMP coachable. And at the same time, the, this model always generate a non-Gaussianity. So it's very interesting to use the non-Gaussianity of the CMP data to track on this, these models. Okay, in the following, we gave an effort to go from homogeneous to directional effects. What's a homogeneous? Most of the models, many models, they can suppress the quadruple, but those many of those models have no direction sense. So as we have seen the anomalies, for example, the axis of evil or the law of self asymmetry, they have direction. So many of these models cannot give a directional sense to explain. Yeah, you couldn't imagine how to explain this directional effect for many of these models. But of course, in the forum, we'll talk about black holes, but there's still are many other models. For example, once quite a popular one is a so-called vector inflation. They give some prepared directions. Yeah, I'm not saying that we are the only one to go beyond the homogeneous in directional effects. Yeah, there's other models, for example, the vector inflation. You, if you're interested, just type vector inflation. I believe you can find many papers on this topic. Okay, let's come to this, the black hole. Okay, before I tell you why we bother with a black hole in inflation. I just give, okay, suppose we have a black hole in inflation, and it's well known. The metric is given by the Schwarzschild de Sitter metric, and this one is, this is it. And without a black hole, you just go for this one. This is the well-known de Sitter space, the Hubble parameter H. And with no inflation, yeah, you cover this one and this one. This is a well-known black hole, Schwarzschild metric. And to combine them, this is the Schwarzschild de Sitter. This is also very well-known Schwarzschild de Sitter space-time with a black hole. With a black hole with mass m, g is the Newton constant, and this is h is the Hubble parameter. And we look at this problem, we use this metric, and we found that it's not very convenient for us to discuss some dynamics during inflation, because this what we call this a static coordinate. It's not convenient if we want to see these dynamics in inflation. So we look at the literature, and there's so-called the planar coordinate, and you can use some coordinate transformation to transform this static coordinate into the so-called planar coordinates. This is the Schwarzschild de Sitter metric in planar coordinates. And this is f function, and h function is given by this one and this one. And m again is the mass of the black hole. And a is the well-known cosmic scale, or the scale factor. Tau is the conformal time. I didn't write it down explicitly. It's the conformal time. What else? Yeah, that's it. Yep.
Question. Yep. So I have in my mind a picture that inflation sort of blows everything up, and you know, if there were like a black hole, right, or the distance to that black hole will just disappear and everything is blown apart. So is it like one black hole or a gas of black holes, or is it, I mean,
you will see. You will see. But yeah, in textbook, you will see another Lohair theorem. Yeah, in fashion suit, erase everything. That's what you are telling.
Right.
Yeah, see. Yeah, we will see later. Okay, we will work on this coordinates and try to understand the effect of a backhole, one backhole first, to inverton perturbation. This is the main calculations of in this paper. Okay, sorry.
I have a question. So you're basically modeling the whole universe with the, instead of using an FRW metric or the Sitter metric, you're using the Schwarzschild.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. In the planar coordinates. Yeah. Okay, sorry, this is quite a busy field graph. Should be enough. Okay, now the problem is very well defined. We have the inverton. The scalar field, and this is the Guyon-Gordon equation for the scalar field under this metric, and the metric is given by the Schwarzschild de Sitter metric in planar coordinates. Okay, for simplicity we put the back hole at the center. And then you have spherical symmetry, and that's why we expand the scalar field in terms of the spherical harmonics here. And after you decompose the standard procedure, the annihilation operator, the creation operator, and the Fourier mode here. The Fourier mode you rewritten in terms of the spherical harmonics, and this the mode function satisfied this equation. This is exact. It's coming from the Guyon-Gordon equation. We found that we couldn't find an exact solution given the F function and the H function in the previous field graph. And we couldn't find any exact solutions for this Guyon-Gordon equation. And so to go further, we use a perturbation method. We expand the mode function in terms of the epsilon parameter. The epsilon is very nice. You can make up a dimensionless parameter, epsilon, the G, the Newton constant, and the mass of the back hole, and next is the Hubble parameter during inflation. This is our expansion parameter. You can expand the function f and h and everything in terms of this epsilon. Okay, then use the perturbation method. The zero order is just a de Sitter space, no back hole, and this is the well known. Okay. No,
epsilon is small, right?
Yeah. Your expansion. Yeah. So it must be small.
So if H is 10 to the 14 GeV.
It depends on the mass.
But yeah. I'm saying that the mass can is not a microscopic black hole, right? By any chance. It's mass. G is 1 over M Planck.
Yeah,
So H is not that far from M Planck, and then so M cannot be like, it's not a microscope.
Not solar mass.
It's
a small,
right, not only the smaller mass, it's not even a milligram, right? I mean, it's a very small.
It's a Planck mass. You cannot go beyond.
Just a little bit more than Planck mass could be.
Right? Yeah, could be, yeah. But this is doesn't have to be like that. We are using perturbation. We are restricted to this. For this calculation, M cannot be so large.
But if it's so small, it also has some evaporation timescale, which is very short, right?
Yeah. But you can make an estimate. It's fine. Yeah. For a planar mass back hole, it's
probably regulated by a very similar
parameter like g times m, I don't know, squared or something, I don't know.
But it's longer than the duration of inflation. Yeah, you can make bigger estimate. Yeah, we have checked that already. Yeah. A small black hole evaporates very fast, but somehow it's long compared to inflation time. Okay, and this is the zero order equation. It's just the quantum fluctuations in de Sitter space. This is the well known Hawking radiation solution. And the first order correction, we call it a one here, and it have some source. Yeah, this is quite standard using perturbation to calculate these corrections. This is zero order is the quantum fluctuations in de Sitter space. It's the well known Hawking de Sitter quantum fluctuation or the Hawking fluctuation. And this is the first correction. The first correction is given by source. It's sourced by J1. The J1, as you may expect, is coming from the zero order de Sitter fluctuation here. And also the epsilon parameter is here. The epsilon parameter is the black hole. So this source actually is coming from the black hole, coming from the epsilon. Okay. And as I said, the zero order, you have the exact solution is the Hankel function here. This is the Hankel function solution. And the first order, then you can do it by the Green's function method. This is a Green function. The Green function is given by the same equation of motion, but with a delta function source here. And this is the source, the J1. And this is very standard, the Green's function. Then you can solve the Green's function. And the Green's function is given by this, a bunch of Hankel functions. This is the Green function. And with the Green function, and then given the source, then you can calculate the first order correction to the quantum, to the de Sitter quantum fluctuation. Okay, this is the result we have obtained. And the total power spectrum, we have seen that, the scalar power spectrum is given by the, let's just jump to this, this is the Hawking quantum fluctuation and the first correction. And you can rewrite this everything in terms of, let's see, we call this, the zero order. The zero order means just de Sitter quantum fluctuations. And this is the first, the zero order solution. And it's well known, it's h over 2 pi squared. And this is coming from the Hankel function. And at late time, this is very small. So it gives you the well known de Sitter quantum fluctuations. And this is the first correction. Yeah, you can put it nicely in terms of epsilon. Epsilon is the epsilon parameter, g times m times the Hubble h here. Here, sorry. For boundary conditions, remember this is the standard zero order de Sitter quantum fluctuations. Yeah, they choose a boundary conditions very long. Yeah, yeah. The positive energy boundary condition. Yeah. Then the source. The source is already determined by this zero order equation. So for the first order, you don't need to worry about the boundary conditions.
Well, the zero order because it's only physical, so I guess you only need to set one boundary condition. Hmm. It's just that now you have a black hole, I think you will have to worry about boundary condition.
Oh, Yeah, pure feeling about R equals zero thing. Yeah. This is a very subtle, subtle problem, yeah. And I will come back to you, Yamis. Yep. And let me show you this result. The first order correction, and this is the standard zero order thing, and the epsilon the parameter here, and this is the we call it capital delta KL, and capital delta DL is given is here, yeah. And this is L, and it depends on the full MOK, and also the harmonics L, and this is the L and K. Yo. If you don't have any correction, then this is zero, of course. But now this correction, the first order correction, of course, it's suppressed by a small, maybe order one, at most order one epsilon here. And also, this one, if there's no back hole, then it would be zero. But now you can see this, it's scale dependent. This depends on L and as well as K. So that means it depends on mean scale and also the harmonics. And it's quite a complicated function on K and L. And the message is it's good. Yeah, you now get a correction to the De Sitter quantum fluctuation due to the back hole, and it depends on K, the length scale, and also L, harmonics. So you have some direction and also scale dependence. Yep. And now we are trying to use this correction to calculate the imprint of this metric, this metric perturbation on CMB. Yeah, we are still doing this problem. Okay, I hope I could report on this CMB side in the future. But as Maxim, a question about where's the back hole? Yeah, this is the it's a lot of speculations from this point. Yeah, and so. Maybe before inflation, there's a lot of back holes. Yeah, due to this well-known pi module back holes, it may form via quantum fluctuations, this pi module back holes. And of course, inflation will dilute a back hole gas to dilute it to a very large extent. But even though if our universe contains one back hole, only one back hole, it has effect on inflation perturbation, as we have seen in the previous calculations. Then it may have some effect on CMB. It would be interesting if our universe contains a few back holes or many back holes. It depends on the density you have. This is a very interesting problem.
Center, or if it's on the side, it's...
Yeah, then you complicate the problem. Yeah, we for simplicity.
Just
yeah, it doesn't matter. Yeah.
If it's on the center, you don't get an axis. Yeah, you don't, right. Well, but if it's on the side, you might get too much of an axis, right?
Yeah, then the problem become complicated. You have to translate the back hole to the other off-center, and then it's very messy. Yeah. See. And actually, after we have done this problem, I think we look up the Carol and John and Matt Rice paper. Oh, they are talking about the same thing. Yeah. They at that time they don't have dynamics. They don't have content. They just write down a very general CMB and isotropy due to a point, even go beyond the point, a line, maybe a cosmic string, a plane, maybe a domain wall during inflation. They don't talk about black hole, cosmic string, or domain wall. They just all assume there's a point, preferred direction during inflation. What the CMB would look like? Yeah, they wrote down a very general solution for this problem. Yeah, I think since then they have also considered. For example, black hole and also a cosmic string due to inflation. I think this problem is very interesting. Yeah, and so as we have mentioned about this, so something might have taken place at the 60 E voltings. Before the end of inflation, such that they have imprinted on this large-scale CMB anomalies. But I have to admit that it's a fine-tuning problem. Yeah, and so I've said it's very interesting to ask: is it possible not to fine-tune inflation duration to 60 volts, to fine-tune what the physics at exactly at 60 volts. Yeah, if we go beyond this, we don't want this fine-tuning problem, fine-tuning to 60 volts, then there must be something happening during a slow inflation. And in addition to that, then the formation way, yes, now say black hole, the formation way of black hole must be must not be far below the expansion rate of inflation. If it's far below, then inflation will dilute whatever being formed during inflation.
Very so, probably yeah. Estimate what the formation rate of black holes yeah. should be due to the thermal fluctuations.
Oh, this thermal is before inflation. I'm talking about during.
If they were present before inflation and then you had many, many, many foldings, then clearly you will not have any black holes.
Yeah, then.
Right? I mean, so in that sense, that will be a fine tuned situation. Yeah.
Yep.
In terms of the number of foldings, right? You might have some weird mechanism whereby the, you know, like there could be constant
generation yeah, there's
of primordial black holes during inflation, which is of course.
Yeah. But this one. This one we are talking about before inflation. Yeah. Now in the following we are talking about during inflation. Could we have black holes during inflation? Okay. This is what the number one is not new. And in fact, so when you research the literature, everything is not new. Yeah. And people talk about this. Of course, the quantum fluctuations, inflation, quantum fluctuation, the quantum process. Some part of the, for example, we have inflation with a vacuum lambda 2, and some quantum fluctuation, maybe some part of the universe during inflation has higher vacuum density, we call it lambda 1, and this we assume is spherical in shape. This inhomogeneity, lambda 1, this part, will they collapse into black holes? Yeah. And the second speculation is inspired by, from the string landscape.
Is it the Stanford connection?
Yeah, spend too much time in Stanford, then everything is landscape there. So the landscape, there's many digital vacuum that this number, and so there are a lot of metastable states, and there's a lot of bubble regression happening in this really strange landscape, and usually this barrier is of string scale, and the tunneling weight is very small. And I just describe what people think about this landscape. The space time is very complicated. It's a hierarchy of the sitter vacuum bubble. You can imagine a lot of matter spills there, tunneling happen every time. And the tunneling is very small. So most part is undergone inflationary phase for a very long time. And so hopefully we have some regions tunnel down to a flat potential for slow roll inflation, because so far we need slow roll inflation to explain data. And somehow you can find a very flat plateau here. This is our the inflation that we need to produce our universe. And now at the end, we are sitting in this a vacuum with a very small cosmological constant. Okay. And this is Henry Tai and my friend, and Gary Seale. They propose, due to this very complicated metastable vacuum, the tunneling may not be slow. I'm not expert in this field. They propose that the tunneling may be very efficient because there are a lot of metastable states and rabbit. If this is true, then during inflation, maybe some part during inflation along this flat plateau, because beside this flat plateau, there's a lot of metastable state sitting around this flat plateau. Maybe some part of universe tunnel through this rapid tunneling into another vacuum. So once these bubbles nucleate, will these bubbles collapse into black holes again? That's what we want. We don't want a fine-tuning problem. We want the black holes being formed during inflation to affect the CMB and anisotropy. That's what our goal. And so we back to analyze this the motion of the bubble wall. So you have a bubble. Will this bubble extend to eat up the lump, this lump? This is the bubble, the lambda one. Will lambda one eat up the lambda two, or lambda one collapse into black holes? And then this is where well-known problem. We are not the first to do it, also a lot of papers. Now you're talking about the motion of the bubble wall. And now we analyze this problem, how the lambda one region, the wall between the lambda one and lambda two move. And problem is very nice. The lambda one region is a de Sitter space. The lambda two regions from the outside is a Schwarzschild de Sitter metric. The lambda one chi one is the chi one is the lambda one region. This is the Hubble parameter inside the bubble, the lambda one, and chi two is the Hubble parameter outside the bubble, in the lambda two region. This lambda two, and this is the mass. M is the mass of this bubble, and kappa is the surface tension, and sigma is the sigma is the surface tension, and kappa is these parameters. So the motion of the bubble wall is determined by a very nice problem, is by potential. And this is the bubble radius. And this is the bubble radius in terms of Z. This is the bubble radius. And this is the potential. And the motion of the bubble wall is a kinematics determined by this potential. If the bubble form at this radius, and then it will slide down and expand, the bubble will expand. if the bubble radius is here, then it will go down to the center of the potential. If that means it collapse into a black hole or a wormhole. Yeah, this is a well-defined problem determined by four parameters: this m, the mass of the bubble, and the surface tension, and the lambda one and lambda two. And we've researched we researched for those four parameters in order to have a black hole formation during inflation. We found quite a big parameter space that allowed this to happen. Yeah, that's what we did in this work. Okay. I have no definite answer to this question, but it seems that there's a huge parameter space that we can have a black hole being formed during inflation. Okay. This is the last few graphs. As I say, now we are doing using our the result of the black hole effects on inflaton perturbation to apply the power spectrum we obtained to CMB anisotropy. We hope we'll get it done soon. And also another problem is study more about these black holes being formed during inflation. Yeah, that's what I wanted to say today. Thank you.
So that equation that you had, the Klein-Norton equation in this background, you solved it perturbatively. Have you looked into trying to solve it numerically?
The full equation? No, yeah. No. You didn't find. Yes.
I mean, how painful. I mean, I agree it's a second order partial, but yeah, there are methods for solving these things numerically.
Yeah, it would be interesting. And also, you could have, for the patient, you couldn't have a big black hole. Yeah.
If it's too small, yeah, as Maxim said, then you run into these issues of it evaporating too rapidly. So yeah, you want to be able to have it as a control parameter to see what it will do with that.
Yeah. I mean, but anyway, for small, prime mass black hole, actually, the lifetime is longer than the duration.
How much longer?
This is some problem space. Yeah, if you're interested, you can look up our paper.
I have another question. Yeah. How important is that? I mean, when you solve it, you put it in the center of this black hole. Obviously,
sure.
Where else?
Yes.
I mean, but as we're looking at our patch of the universe, right? I mean, it's no guarantee that
the
black hole would coincide with our position. Right?
Yep.
So it has to be like your spectrum. We have to account for that.
When we apply this problem to CMB. We have to put the black hole.
There should be an additional parameter,
sure,
right?
Yeah, additional parameter, the distance, the black hole from our universe, from our Earth, So you can imagine, this is an inverse problem. We look at the CMB and anomaly, and we can put a black hole or cosmic strain in order to fit the data. It's a lot of freedom here. Yeah. It's interesting a lot.
Are there any proposals to explain these, L around 20 and 40 anomalies, or just the quadrupole?
People call up some funny potential with a king or a pump.
You roll.
And suddenly,
Fit,
you can see. It's very, not quite physical motivation. Yeah, I agree.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.